Oh, broke out. Now we're in trouble. I'll have to hold it.
Do you want a stand mic instead?
Are there any further questions? I'll stop. Okay, well, thanks very much. I appreciate your presentation. And as you say, when we start talking budget, we'll certainly consider this program and maybe do the study in the meantime as suggested to see how many people would be interested. So again, appreciate your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Councillors and members of staff. If the time comes, we are happy to support the aging resident interest as well. It's just something that we're happy to help with if need be. So thank you again, and have a great rest of your meeting and the rest of your evening.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Resolution 23-750, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from Jacob Hanlon, Municipal Program Coordinator with Food Cycle Science Corporation, regarding the Food Cycler Municipal Food Waste Diversion Program. Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. From GHD?
Yep, Dennis, you should be able to share your screen now.
Good evening. I will see if I can get this shared. Within the municipal infrastructure system. We did a review of the existing conditions and provided recommendations for maintenance of your infrastructure and cost estimates for what those repairs would look like. Legislation that's in place came in 1997 when the Minister of Transportation basically offloaded, if you will, the assessment of bridge structures, and the OSIM manual is in place to provide us some direction that we should inspect bridges every 2 years. They consider structures of 3 meter span or greater to be a bridge, culvert, or tunnel that needs inspections, and they also recommend inspection of retaining walls and movable bridges. And that's been in place now for quite some time. Two screens going here. So we've got quite a few years on some of your bridges. They're on average 60 years old. There's a couple structures that were built in the 1930s, and then you basically have some structures kind of from 1980s, 90s. Every decade thereafter that you've been doing some replacement works. Your culverts are newer. Generally speaking, your bridges are getting aged, but with the limited traffic that you have, the limits to any salts and stuff, they're actually aging quite well. summary of findings. So you have one structure recommended for engineering investigation, and that's a deck condition survey. That's the Herdville Bridge. The reason for doing a deck condition survey on that bridge is there's miscellaneous repairs recommended for that structure. And a deck condition survey allows some additional information for making design decisions as far as what you're going to do with that structure, whether a patch repair is adequate or whether it's something more extensive. If it becomes something extremely extensive, then you may want to consider whether you replace it, but certainly the condition of the bridge at this time doesn't necessarily warrant any major works, we'll say. We have six bridges recommended for rehabilitation of your seven. The top four are the Herdville Bridge, 6.8 kilometers west of Center Road. It's a four span, 24.4 meter long, cast in place concrete T-beam bridge, circa 1930, with a ADT of 100 vehicles a day on average. And the rehabilitation works are estimated to be about $658,000. There is recommendations for patch repairs of the railings, deck, soffit, T-beams. Most of the bridge components need some kind of patch repair. Some embankment works, replacing approach guide rail. You can see in the photo the guide rail is leaning, coming onto the structure. And on the left of the photo, you can see how the guide rail doesn't connect to the railing, which is considered a hazard for impact by vehicles. And we've also recommended you may want to consider replacing the barrier system on this bridge, because the bridge railing that's there doesn't satisfy current code requirements for vehicular impact. And if we're undertaking a bunch of repairs on the bridge, it's worth considering doing that upgrade at the same time. Forge Bridge number two is the second one. It's on Bradbent Road. Sorry, I'm playing with my thing to get it set up here so I can read my notes. There we go. Single span, 12.2 meter long, concrete TV bridge, again, 1930 circa, so 93 years old. An AADT of 50 cars a day. The rehabilitation works on it are some, again, patch type repairs to deteriorated components, much less extensive than Herdville, $122,000 estimated, and a little bit of embankment work. The third ranking is actually a fairly minor repair. Stewart Park Bridge, single span, 20 meter long, precast concrete girder bridge, built in 1992, an AADT of 80. And the works there are almost more of a maintenance work than a full what I would call rehabilitation type work. And the fourth one is Gray Owl Bridge, 2.4 kilometers west of Highway 124. It's a 5.9 meter span structural steel girder bridge, 1984 construction, an AADT of 10 vehicles a day. And the rehabilitation is to replace the retaining walls and repair the abutments at an estimated cost of about $128,000. So in summary, what we have for recommended repairs total about $1.13 million. Bulk of that is for a Herdville Bridge. Your now needs, which now needs doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily do something now, but it's a deteriorated component that is considered to be in condition of rating of two or under that puts it in a now need, or a functional need that is considered a now need. Guide rail is typically a now need if it's needed. Then you have your 1 to 5 year needs of about 810,000, your 6 to 10, which is more long-term planning, 151,000. You have no recommended works at this time for your culverts. And we also go through a relatively simplistic look at what replacement costs should be budgeted for annually. You're actually in not too bad a shape for that because a fair number of your bridges have been built since the 1980s. And that is the end of my presentation. It was fairly straightforward and simple, I guess. Be happy to entertain any questions. I know we have some interest in the Herdville Bridge, and it's an interesting one. I will stop sharing. So I'm certainly open for any questions, and happy to discuss anything at all relevant to the reports.
Okay, no, certainly appreciate your attendance tonight, and we have many experts in the township, as you probably know, but it's good to hear from someone who actually knows what he's talking about, and a lot of the figures you gave us, of course, it's just numbers on a page for us, so it's good to hear your comments. And I guess the concern has been expressed, as you say, with Herdville Bridge. You talk about repairs as opposed to replace. There's no guarantee, I realize, but if these repairs were actually completed, the $600,000+, does that give us a longer lifespan? I'm just wondering, should we be actually applying at this point for government grants, et cetera, and talking to our municipal partner, McDougall, it's a boundary road, and should we be looking at replacement as opposed to repair?
The big driver there, the bridge is actually in pretty darn good shape. From a bridge that was built in 1930, it's holding up really well. If the primary cause of a bridge that old start get deteriorating, like I would say more quickly or more substantially, tends to be a change in use. So if you had a logging operation and suddenly started hauling big loads over it, or a gravel pit open and all of a sudden a lot of dump trucks are running over and stuff like that, a bridge that old tends to deteriorate more quickly when something like that changes. We have had bridges before where they're holding up really well and all of a sudden there's big subdivisions, say in southern Ontario, when they start calling loads over it, and it deteriorates real quick. So this bridge, it has some challenges. It's narrow, it's one lane. It wouldn't meet the width requirements even for what would be considered a low volume road structure these days. So if you replaced it, you would definitely be replacing it with something wider. Probably the 6.5 meter would be considered a single lane bridge. If you put in a two lane bridge, it's probably out about 13 meter wide, so it's substantially bigger than what's there. As long as it's serving your needs, it's probably got an awful lot of life left in it. That being said, if you get a program where they're going to basically cough up the money for you to replace it, it is old.
I appreciate that. It's good to hear that. I guess the other thing is you'd know better than we would. Is there any push on to replace one lane bridges, or are they throughout the province? And is it something we should be looking at?
Yeah, the province produced MTO produced what they call a low volume guideline, and narrower bridges they considered to be okay with until you get up to about 400 cars a day. And then after that, they really don't think the narrow structures will act adequately. So you've got a pretty big buffer there from what I've seen on your traffic volumes.
Other questions from council? Councilor Ryder?
Greg, you may know this better than me. I know from the Roads Needs Study that the average daily traffic volumes that are in there, the one that was completed by another engineering firm, and they were in the range of 20 years old, and somewhere in the document that I was reading this morning, it even mentions the date that those traffic volumes were established. From the census in 2021, our population increased by 28% versus the 2016 census, and I think that's indicative of obviously, substantially higher traffic volumes. But would that be material in your analysis of like when things need to be done or how they should be done? I mean, we're not talking like 100% increase, I'm just saying that I think it's probably a lot higher than when the traffic volumes were last established, that's all. So would there be an impact in terms of what we should do, when we should do it, or how much it would cost?
The big impact there, I mean, the quick answer is not really,
okay.
Unless it was really, really substantial. Because if you're, even if the traffic volumes doubled, you're still only up to around 200.
Okay.
If they got to the point where you say had 1,000 cars a day, I think you would find that there would be traffic backing up at this bridge regularly.
Mm.
Trying to figure out who's going first. At that point, I think you really have to address it.
The other thing I noticed, I think in your report too, that we have no load limits on any of them. Is that something that should be considered? As you say, there have been trucks hauling logs over In-Holmes Bridge, I think, in the past, and should there be load limits to help preserve the bridges?
Well, the challenge with a concrete bridge, a lot of times we don't have drawings of them, so we don't know what the reinforcement looked like, and we're not, sometimes the bridges weren't necessarily built to what the drawing says. I have had a T-beam bridge that we rehabbed at one point, and we opened it up to patch it and found the rebar that was supposed to be vertically going up and down over the T's was actually laying on its side. So that bridge is posted. A lot of times when you assess these bridges, if you actually do have drawings, you find that theoretically they have a load issue with shear, even though they are carrying traffic and show no evidence of problems. The bridge code does allow that if your bridge is performing, you don't necessarily have to post it, as long as you're not seeing issues like shear cracks. If we saw a lot of diagonal cracking near the abutments or piers, or if we saw a lot of spalling going on the bottom of the bridge, those are indications of overload. And at that point, we would definitely be recommending load capacity evaluation. The risk with these old bridges is a lot of times, if you do an evaluation, you're gonna find that theoretically it is really low, even though it's performing. So until you start to see some evidence, it's probably not well spent money.
Councilor Keckin?
I found this very interesting, and thank you that we have a copy of this. When I was reviewing the Township of McKellar 2021 Asset Management Plan, there was a note in there that indicated that the review of the 2021 OSIM inspection report identified the most current Ministry of Transportation Ontario MTO structure degradation models were not used. So maybe we just have some clarification and, what does that mean, or is that an issue?
Sorry, I didn't get the I think similar to your previous caller, the audio's breaking up a bit, so it's a bit hard to catch.
Okay, so looking at the Township of McKellar 2021 Asset Management Plan, there's a note in there that indicates the review of the 2021 OSIM inspection report identified the most current Ministry of Transportation of Ontario structure degradation models were not used. So maybe can you just clarify that, and is that an issue or?
I'm not sure what exactly that's referring to, but I know there there's a lot of work being done to establish deterioration modeling for structures. A lot of that is pretty preliminary yet, because we just don't have the long-term data to create real curves for structures. And the challenge you get, MTO, they're looking at high volumes, significant salt loads, and things like that. So their curves are going to look a lot different than yours would. With your traffic volumes and limited salt use, generally speaking, your deterioration is going to look a lot flatter than their normal lines would.
Okay, thank you.
I wonder, some of these repairs that you mentioned, is that something that our public works could do? Or do we have to, I'm just wondering if they do it and finish the job, do they have to have somebody come in and inspect to make sure that it's completed?
We've had some municipalities can. The critical thing with concrete repairs is if you don't do the preparation fully and completely, you don't get a long-lasting repair. So that's why a lot of times that's pretty specialized. You know, things like embankment works and railing repairs, guide rail, stuff like that, a lot of municipalities can do. So it kind of depends with a specific municipality, what their forces are comfortable doing. I have seen some municipalities, typically upper tier municipalities, that have had a crew that's experienced in construction, and they can do a lot of those concrete type works. But a lot of those have changed over the last 10, 15 years, and they've kind of gone the route of tendering them out instead. But a lot of your basic type, you know, if an embankment's eroding and you need to drop some rock on it, a lot of municipalities can do that kind of thing. You just have to be cognizant that sometimes you have to touch base with your Ministry of Natural Resources before you do that to make sure that you're not going to get into trouble for dropping silt into the water. And there's a lot of sensitivities around those environmental issues now these days.
Okay, appreciate that. I don't want to put Greg on the spot, but the repairs that were mentioned here, but I feel that that's something that staff could look at. My concern is, I guess, once staff completes it, I'm sure they can, a lot of those repairs, do you have to get an inspection again by an engineer to make sure that you've met the recommendations that were in the proposal?
So any repairs we would do that we're comfortable doing, we do. We don't need an engineer to inspect. So anything that's concrete related besides parging, we don't do. It's just you're putting band-aids on stuff that an engineer down the road would want to look at and should be looking at. So I just don't do that. It's not good practice.
Generally speaking, from our standpoint too, if you're just doing some basic repairs, it probably doesn't need to get looked at by an engineer. If you're doing something that's strengthening a structure, then that probably should be.
I'm thinking of some of the things with the guide rails and that, for instance. We used to have particular companies come in to do those. And the embankments, I think that's something you could probably do. The gabion stone and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, there's certain things that I can do and certain things I won't do. So it depends on the job.
Yeah.
Like, it really does. Like, that railing that's bent, well, it hasn't been repaired yet, because that's hopefully going to be an insurance claim.
Right.
So that's why that hasn't been touched. People need to see these things. So, you know, it's still functioning. May not look pretty, but it's still functioning until it gets tendered out. That will be tendered out, because now we have to connect it to the bridge.
Yeah.
So, and the entire railings on the bridge need to be replaced. You can't just repair it. Is that your understanding too, that the railings on the Herdville Bridge need to be replaced, not repaired?
Ideally, that would be done, I guess, because the last time I looked at it, it had substantial damage. And certainly if a car hit it with with any significant force, it'd go right through it.
That's right.
So ideally, it would be brought up to a standard that if a car hit it, it would deflect back onto the deck. That's kind of the nature of what the design railing is supposed to do to be in current standards. And looking at the area, it probably would want to be adequate for pedestrians as well, so you'd have to maintain a proper height on it. You couldn't just put a guide rail across it, I would think. The other thing I was going to mention with guide rail, there's a lot of standards in place with that now, with the MASH standards and stiffing up when you get to a structure, attenuators on the end. So there's a lot of nuances that you want to make sure if you're replacing guide rail that you're meeting all of those things, because otherwise you might open yourself up to a liability.
Yeah, that was my concern, I guess, from the township's point of view. Once we know about some of the things that have to be repaired, is there any grace period for your due diligence to make sure that we've done these things?
Yeah, what I've always suggested to councils is if something happens somewhere, you'll get sued. That's the nature of the beast these days. But I think if you could say, you know what, we're addressing stuff, and yes, that one's on our list, we just haven't, we had higher priorities, but we are actively doing stuff, I think you have some defense. If, you know, if something happens and you say, well, we aren't, you know, we haven't been doing anything, then you probably leave yourself open. So I think if, as long as you have established a program, I think at least you give yourself something on the defense side.
Okay. Any other questions from council? Anybody on Zoom wish to ask a question? I see a few people on there. Well, again, I appreciate that you're able to lend your expertise to us, and we just don't have words on a page and figures, and it sounds a little more comforting to hear you speak about the condition of our bridges and the culverts. So thanks again for your presentation.
You're very welcome. Have a great evening.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, resolution 23-751.
Yeah.
Moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from Dennis Baxter, Senior Structural Manager with GHD Engineering, regarding the Township's 2023 Municipal Structure Inventory and Inspection Report. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. If you can hang in there, Greg, we have a few other things to take care of too, but we have resolution 23-752 moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the November 21st, 2023 regular meeting of Council and the November 24th, 2023 special meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? All the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried.